It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good morning. Slightly different scenery for us today on a Tuesday. Jim Costa, John Jansen.
Who doesn't love being out in nature? And one that is so finely manicured as the U of M golf course.
We're broadcasting still in the moonlight. Sun yet to come up this morning. A little different for us as we hang out live, yes, at the University of Michigan golf course. Heather back in the studio. Two Grand Slams. She'll be ready for that. Heather, what's going on? Good morning.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
How was the weekend? This is, to me, Monday, so I'm going to start with my Monday questions. How was your weekend and a day with Stoney yesterday?
It was a great day with Stoney, and it was a great weekend. We did something that you guys like to do. We went to Greenfield Village.
Oh, we have been talking about that. I've been sharing my experiences. Mm-hmm. How did Emily like the horses, the ducks, the chickens, everything?
She loved the horses and the carousel. And we played like the old-timey, like, toys. You know, we sat down on lawn and played with blocks and wooden puzzles, and she liked that as well. So, yeah, it was a great day.
That's terrific.
And Heather almost threw up.
I did. Carousel and I don't agree. As of late, like the older I get or after having kids, like spinning like that or even going on a swing, I can't handle that anymore. And I almost puked.
It's funny you say that because this coming weekend, everybody knows, right? Lucy's going to Purdue. She's going to have her freshman. It's my first one going off to college. So this weekend, the kids said, hey, is there any chance that we could one last family trip, one last moment of summer before Lucy goes off, we're going to go down to Cedar Point on one of those days. And I've kind of experienced the same thing where the roller coasters aren't that comfortable for me anyway because of the leg room. but I've always loved them. And the last time we were down at Disney, I'm like, wait a second here. This is – something feels different.
Oh, no.
And like just like you. I don't know if I have always been a roller coaster guy. I've always been a guy that even the tilt-a-whirl, all those things, I make it go. The teacups at Disney, I make it spin as fast as possible. And I've always been, hey, 30 seconds after, I've recovered. This past trip down there, like we went on one ride, and I'm like, wait, I don't know if I can do this anymore. So I'm curious as to what this weekend is going to be like. There might be, because I'm not going to not do it. There might be some soiled trash cans.
I hope not, because I like roller coasters too, so I hope you have a good experience.
I hope so too. But yeah, our weekend, I'm happy to be back, glad that we're outside, because next week we're going to be outside 5 days in a row doing the show down from Lions training camp. Today the vets report, football season. You can almost, I mean, obviously we're here in Ann Arbor. You can feel it. You could taste it. You could smell it. The big house is right behind us. It is the happiest time of year.
I can't properly describe the smile that I'm seeing from you today. It's as big a grin as I've seen from John Jansen. And people need to know, by the way, as you're walking up, you're waving to the groundskeeper here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, guy trimming the golf course. Oh, yes, Mr. Jansen, we'll get you your coffee. I mean, he's beloved over here.
It is. Well, I mean, this is obviously, I mean, I've been coming here for, since I was a senior in high school. That's the great thing about this. And this is a little side story. This is probably one that nobody cares about unless you're a Wolverine. The one nice thing, and I think this is probably true on most college campuses, when you go back to your alma mater, there are so many people that they're lifers. You know, I'm sure you experienced this in Mount Pleasant for Central, for here, for me in Ann Arbor. You go back and there are so many people that are still here from my time as a student. You get a chance to see everybody, and obviously I see them all quite a bit now, but it's just nice to be able to be back and see some of the familiar faces.
Well, part of us being out here today, Sherrone Moore is going to stop by at some point, and we're going to talk to the head coach of Michigan football.
A lot
new
of
head coach. Coming off a national championship, you lose most of your offense. Everyone says you're going to take a step back. Well, we're going to hear from the man exactly. Yeah. You have put together, and I love that you did this, it's almost a survey. It's a fill-in-the-blank game with Michigan football. We're going to do that at 6:35 this morning.
I'm a big Mad Libs guy.
Are you?
And just because I like to mess with the kids. And I was trying to think, you know, how could we make this a little, you know, spruce it up a little bit? And it's, you know, it's, I'm not, it's just to fill in the blank. So I'm not going to give you options. But I think this is going to be one where it'll be interesting to see what some of your answers, and Greg, I know he's going to be the one asking the questions when we get to that segment. But I'm curious to get some of his feedback as well.
Yeah, Michigan Mad Libs, we'll call it. We'll get to that at 6:35. Okay, we started with roller coasters. Let's get to the ultimate roller coaster that is the Tigers season. They won yesterday.
Could they make it any harder?
Right, this idea of what are they supposed to do at the deadline. They didn't make up any ground in the wild card race. But they're 12-5 now in July, and I started looking this up because the offense has been noticeable.
Yeah,
5.6 runs per game in July. It's a full run more than their season average. And John, what have we talked about? All these close games. What would one more run mean for this team? It means 12-5 in July. And if you start winning, if they can shave this down, and I started thinking about this yesterday. Look at me being positive. Yep. If they could shave this down to 2 or 3 games by the deadline, maybe that's too tall a task. Does it change any of the decision-making? Because I think you can make a case to keep Flaherty at that point. If you're within 2-3 games, the only thing holding you back, your offense is hitting, is you don't have a real rotation. You're down to a 3-man rotation. I don't know what it looks like if you trade Flaherty. Could they keep him with the idea that they intend to extend him, that they want to pay good players and be more competitive, finish this in 25 if they fall short?
So the only leverage they have right now, obviously they have the one major spending piece, and that's Tarek Skubal. And we've talked a lot about that. I know John Morosi came out with a tweet that you guys had in the last hour of the show yesterday about scouts down at Baltimore in the farm system. And that's what they should be doing anyway, whether they were going to be buying or selling or holding, whatever. But with Flaherty, I think if they're not going to sell him, if they're going to actually say, hey, we think we got a shot at a wild card spot, and because the young bats, we didn't block them. Now all of a sudden they're coming to life. We argued a lot at the beginning of the season, but they are where they are right now. Is it possible that they can extend Flaherty by a year? Because if they get past the trade deadline, he's not going to extend. He's going to want to get to free agency or at least a qualifying offer.
See the market. The qualifying offer is going to be, you know, north of $20 million for one season, but he's going to want a multi-year deal, and that's where you have to bid against everybody else. But here's where we got to get to a point where you're willing to pay guys, and specifically guys that you have seen in your own uniform that have helped you reach some level of success. So whether it's Skubal, you know, maybe the biggest name that – are you going to secure him long-term beyond, you know, this next couple years of team control? Flaherty, more immediate.
Yeah.
But if they're serious, and that word keeps getting thrown around, if they're serious, that's if they're within a couple games, that's if they're committed to keeping Flaherty, then you can justify keeping him and maybe seeing where this thing goes. But, John, if they sit 6 games back a week from today at the trade deadline, I think that makes it pretty obvious you're sellers, right?
Yes, you would have to be. And maybe that decision has already been made. We've talked about this. You mentioned the roller coaster that this is. It is, you know, we went from Flaherty is automatically going to be sold, or Shella, Canna, all of these different, you know, pieces. But if they believe, and who knows, do they get Kerry Carpenter back at some point this year?
I don't really think so at this point. I mean, who knows, but I don't think so.
Yeah, and so Mize, Reese Olson now is a part of that equation. There are so many different factors, and here's what I think: if they feel like they can make a run at it this year, I believe before the trade deadline, they've got to get something inked with Flaherty. If that's the decision,
and if they don't, you want to trade him?
Yeah, because you don't want to have another Erod situation where he walks at the end of the year, you get nothing for him, because you do have a valuable piece right now, but. So let's just play this game. If they are able to do that and the runs keep being produced even near the level that they're producing right now, I do think that there is an outside chance that they could make a run at the wild card. Even if they keep Flaherty, they extend them, there's no guarantee that they make the playoffs, but there is that chance now. But if they're able to keep this pitching staff together, because you and I both agree, and I think everybody, it's master of the obvious, that is the strength of the Detroit Tigers. then what does it look like next year? Does it include Jackson Jobe?
Potentially, yeah.
Now all of a sudden you've taken one of the best pitching rotations in baseball. You've made it even better and more dangerous. Now those bats that are starting to come alive now, and then does that include Jace Young? Does it include maybe one or two more bats that they add in free agency? I mean, hey, you mentioned spending.
Stop like, my beating heart. Are you serious right now?
But that's kind of where they're at right now. And you've got to look at Scott Harris and say, you know what? He gambled on his own guys. I'm not here sitting here saying it's paying off, but it's looking better. And is it possible that they could keep this staff together, add, you know, Jobe to it, and maybe another, because Maeda's got to be gone at some point, even if he makes it through the end of the year.
And Baez, by the way, too.
But
if they came into next season without Maeda and Baez, with a bat or two, plus the rotation intact, that's a team in 25 that feels real, that feels like a threat. That's not what we said before the season. And they slow played it. Their choice, we don't need to rehash it. Is it starting to come together in July? They're 12-5. They're hitting. In the update you hear, yeah, Malloy hits a home run. He's red hot right now. All I'm saying is we have a week until the deadline. If they make it closer, if they close the gap, I'm more open to keeping Flaherty than I've ever been.
I feel so much like a flip-flopper because let's just enjoy the excitement that is the Tigers at the beginning of the season. We didn't know if it was for real. We didn't really believe it was for real. And now we're, you know, hey, leading up to the All-Star break, it was 8 out of 10. And now they are three out of four coming out of the break. And we've gone from, you got to sell Flaherty. It should already be decided. Scooble, we were open to the decision. I know you were in the camp of, hey, let's keep him, but it's a huge trading piece. How much better could you make the team? To now, they are making it tough. And that's what AJ said last week. Our job is to make it a tough decision. Our job is to push them to buy. There's nothing for them to buy with, but It's been an absolute roller coaster.
I think buy's off the table. It's either sell or to some level stay, hold. And you're only going to hold if you're within a couple games to me. Now, that's the beauty of winning. Yep. Don't feel like a flip-flopper. If they win, things change. That's the beauty of winning in sports. 248-539-9797. Your baseball team has won 12 games in July, 12-5 in July, 5.6 runs per game. Does it change any of the deadline decisions? It's 97-1.
From the WWJ 24-Hour Traffic Center, sponsored by Avis Ford. Hey, we are accident-free for the start of your morning. Just a little reminder to you of this work crew you're going to find along northbound, southbound 75. This is between 13 Mile Road and Coolidge. Now, they are moving, blocking out that left and right lane. The entire project is going to take us through the first couple of weeks of next month. Hey, they're not kidding when they say they can get you the absolute lowest prices and lease payments in Metro Detroit, because Avis Ford has a huge inventory, dozens and dozens of 2024 courtesy vehicles, including Broncos, F-150s, and Edges. You will love your Avis Ford. Call 1-800-SHOP-FORD. I'm Val Beery with traffic.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Technically a triple E8. Jake Rogers wants to appeal it. Tigers win. They've won 3 of 4 out of the break. They're 12-5 in the month of July, yet still 6 games back. Has anything changed? 248-539-9797. We're hanging out at University of Michigan Golf Course today, and you can still see the mist coming off the course early in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's some great memories here. Also some angst.
What's the angst about?
We used to, Mike Gillison, our strength and conditioning coach, on Fridays during the summer, we used to come and run the golf course. And so I'm looking at, you know, these different holes. And so I think this is 9, and we used to run back this way down 9.
Well, downhill's a lot more fun.
And then back up 10.
Not
and
as
it
fun.
Just and you know, you couldn't use the cart path. You had to be running right down the middle of the fairway. So, yeah, it was
how early were those workouts?
Oh, I mean, 5 or 6 in the morning.
So it was
obviously you had to do it before
everybody else was golfing.
Yeah.
That's why I asked. So
yeah.
you're running under the moonlight. This feels
we took care of the mist and the dew on the course to knock it off for all the golfers.
All right, some ticket texts that have come in. This one says, Jim, they've won 3 or 4 since the break, and they've only picked up a game. They're not going to pick up 3 or 4 more in the next week. They have to get something for Flaherty. Most likely this person's right. My thing is I'll leave the door open given how hot they are. If they can get within a couple games and they're committed to extending him, you can keep him. What is most likely is what the texter says. What is most likely is what we've been talking about for a couple months, they're going to end up selling. But, hey, if you're going to win, we've said all along winning changes things. We've wanted this team to win and hit a little bit. We've been waiting months for this. See where it goes. A week is probably not enough time to get back in to the wild card race. But we got a week to see.
Yeah, and there's probably going to be 2 more times for Flaherty to take the mound before the trade deadline.
It feels like there's some pretty big extremes here, right? There's a lot on the line when Flaherty throws the next couple starts. The other side of the coin, where they're keeping guys and holding, it's selling. Scooble threw yesterday. He's got 1 more start before the trade deadline. I mean, there's a thought that could have been his last start in a Tiger uniform. I don't know if that went through your head yesterday.
Oh, yeah. I mean, every time Scooble or Flaherty take them out, I'm wondering, is this the last time we're going to see him in a Tiger uniform? And for Flaherty, it's been good to be able to see before the break, it was, the tightness in the back. Like, how much will that affect his trade value? And we've seen a few starts now where he's been very good. He's looked healthy. So I think that question has been answered. But every time he takes the mound, you're like, wait a second here. How much does what he has done this year versus maybe what he does, because he's scheduled to start on Wednesday, tomorrow. If he has a bad outing, does that affect, or is it simply you look at what the resume is this year going in through the rest of the season for whoever that buyer might be?
I would just say this. It's fluid. It's fluid. And that's a compliment because it wasn't that way until they started winning. It was pretty clear. Now it's at least fluid. Quick ticket text for Heather before we get to the news.
Yeah.
Heather, this person says, I'm a 46-year-old man, and I can barely play Ring Around the Rosie with my 3-year-old anymore without getting dizzy. Says, I've never been the same since Vertigo. Love the show. Go Blue, go Lions. So you're not alone, Heather.
Yeah, it is awful. Like, I do the same thing. I don't play Ring Around the Rosie, but I'll spin Emily around, and I one little like loop around, I'm like, I'm done. I'm done.
Apparently, this is how it works. John in Lake Orion says, the older you get, the inner ear fluid regulating motion sickness thickens. There's some science for you, and makes you more susceptible to losing your lunch.
Oh, lovely.
So that's uplifting for everybody today. All right, maybe there's better stuff in the news.
Jim, we're just giving you a preview of your future.
No, thank you.
It's coming your way, too. You're going to be old one day
as well. Ring around the Rosie with a 3-year-old?
No, thanks.
No, but just puking,
well,
dizziness.
Well, and I always say it's better than the alternative. You'd rather live to be old enough to deal with those problems. So,
yes.
All right.
That is true. That is true. Well, the man who is accused of fatally shooting a Melvindale officer and eluding authorities for more than a day is finally in police custody. 44-year-old Michael Lopez was arrested on Monday evening in a Detroit neighborhood. He was wanted in connection with the fatal shooting of Officer Mohammed Saeed that happened late Sunday morning. Multiple agencies were involved in this manhunt. There was a large reward as well. More than $37,000 was being offered for any information leading to this man's arrest. So thankfully, they found him and they got him. The search is also on for a group of teens who broke into the Warren stamping plant and stole several brand new Jeep Grand Wagoneers valued at more than $1 million combined. I was going to say $1,000. That's nothing.
Toy wagon?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Toy trucks at that point.
Toy trucks. Warren police believe that these group of about 10 teens, they say all under 18 years old, used another car to smash through the fence of the plant and then stole these 10 Jeep Wagoneers. They have recovered a couple of them, but
they run out of gas like the Raptors did?
Probably. I don't know. They didn't give details on that, but I'm sure they weren't sitting there with a full tank of gas. So hopefully those teens are also found. You probably saw this because this has kind of taken over social media. Dan Campbell's face is now a work of art. Have you seen this? There's a corn maze in the shape of his face. It's at an Ingham County farm. Choice Farm Market, this is near Weberville, is the home of this, you know, larger than life Campbell inspired maze. He's got this grit hat on, a lion's mane around his face. One Pride and Go Lions slogans are also there. It's pretty incredible. The co-owner of the farm and like the mastermind behind all of it, Loretta Benjamin, just says, you know what? It was just like a moment of brilliance when she came up with the design that was going to be made. It's now become this viral internet sensation. It sounds like this is something they do every year, right? They come up with a really special corn maze, but this one has really taken off. And it wasn't actually supposed to be unveiled yet, but somebody flew a drone over it and got images of it. So either way, she said they're excited that people are loving it. And it's going to be open in September 28th for their fall festival.
I can't imagine what it would take to be able to manicure what... I mean, the corn maze, right, you get it. You mow some rows and you do, right, you know, some different things. But to actually make this, because it does actually look like Dan Campbell.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And it is very intricate. I can only imagine what it would take to first design it, implement it, and manicure it.
Well, it only took, I don't know if I should say only. It took 12 hours to make. To me, that's pretty quick,
longer.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, 12 hours is a long day, but... I thought it would have taken days.
Yeah, right. It says it was completed in weeks. Under 12 hours by Precision Mazes.
And you said it'll be open when?
September 28th. They have a fall festival and
just
some other
in time.
Yep.
For the Lions Monday night game against the Seahawks.
That's going to be awesome.
How exciting. Let's see. The Macomb County Sheriff's Office is warning the public of a deadly car surfing trend that's taking over social media. So car surfing is exactly what it sounds like. Somebody stands on top of the car, right, while another person is driving it. And a lot of teens are doing this trend. It's unfortunate. So they say they've already responded to 3 car surfing incidents in the past month, and all of them have resulted in hospitalizations. Thankfully, no deaths, but it could be deadly. There was one on June 21st in a parking lot. A teen fell off the roof of a Kia. It was driven by another teen. That teen that fell off had head lacerations. And all the teens that have been driving the vehicles have been charged. You can be charged with reckless driving, third degree assault, reckless endangerment. One of the teens was also charged with an OWI. So they've been drinking before some of these as well. So just, I guess if you have teens at home, if you think they might be involved in something like this, maybe just have a chat with them about how unsafe
let's use some
this
common
is.
Sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
You think it would be common sense, but teens don't necessarily have that yet, so a good conversation to have.
Yeah, I feel like Carson Anderson.
Yeah, I was going to say, we got the mower rolling through.
Yeah.
I think that's our cue.
Uh-huh.
Heather with the news. More golf course maintenance on the way. Coming up next, Michigan Mad Libs will fill in the blank. We are out here, University of Michigan Golf Course. We'll look ahead to next season for the Wolverines, defending national champs. Some big questions next, 97.1. Welcome back. Good morning. 97.1. Jim Costa, John Jansen hanging out live at the University of Michigan Golf Course this morning. Big Ten Media Days are this week.
Yeah.
Football is in the air, and that smile is what it's all about, baby.
It is right around the corner. Michigan reports on the 31st. I know Michigan State is going to start camp here pretty soon. The Lions, rookies are in, and today is the day for the vets. It's gonna be unbelievable.
If you can hear the mower in the background, that's what that is.
Getting the grounds ready.
We got business to do. Greg has a series of questions, fill in the blank Michigan Mad Libs for the upcoming season.
Well, we're actually going to start with some open form questions, so it's a little bit of a blue book exam. Hope you guys didn't step on the M at the Diag to start the day.
Oh, never do. Never do.
We will start. Question number one, what is the biggest question you have about Michigan football this year?
The biggest question is going to be a leadership void. Who is going to step up? And this is where I always go to every single season at this time of the year. You move on from all the guys that had such influence last year, Mikey Sanders still, and that whole group of captains. Now it's going to be who fills that leadership void. Mason Graham, Kenneth Grant, Will Johnson. Who's going to be the quarterback? That's going to be a big question. But I'm more curious as to when you get into the tougher games like Texas and Ohio State at the end of the year. Who has stepped up when things get tough to rally the troops, to make sure everybody knows it's going to be okay. We've got the talent. Now let's just go out there and play. So who's going to be those juniors and seniors that step up and fill the void that is left by those that have moved on and are playing on Sundays right now?
John goes intangible. I'll go tangible, this passing attack. You don't know who your quarterback is. You don't know who many of these receivers are. Are you going to be able to bludgeon people on the ground the way you did a year ago? You lost everybody up front. I think the question marks are in the downfield passing game.
Jim, those are the obvious. I will go the non-obvious of the tangible. The back end of the defense, the Rod Moore injury, which has not gotten a lot of publicity, and Keon Sabb transferring to Alabama. We do have Mekari Page back there. Who's the second safety spot? I'm looking at Quentin Johnson. Remember, he had a huge hit in the Ohio State game last year. Back end of the defense, who replaces Rod Moore and Keon Sabb? Number two, what is the biggest challenge for Sherrone Moore in his first year?
The bigger Big Ten. I mean, the schedule is going to be a lot more difficult. Texas isn't in the Big Ten, but that's part of it. Now you throw Oregon in the mix, USC. You're going to have more difficult challenges along the way before that final game against Ohio State. It's just a tougher schedule in addition to the fact that they lost so many people.
And here's the other thing. Here's my answer. It's at some point there's going to be a loss this year. Last year, obviously, Jim Harbaugh was the coach. They ran through everything. And Sherrone Moore had a chance to step in at Penn State, against Maryland, against Ohio State. But at some point this year, I really believe there's going to be an L. How does Sherrone Moore handle that as the head coach? As an offensive coordinator, it's you've got your side of the ball to rally the troops, to make adjustments, to corrections. But as the head coach, there is so much more. We know on game days he can call a good game, and he can be a game manager in those moments. But when you are the leader of the program, and you take a loss, the first one you've had in over a calendar year, how do you handle that situation? What the players are going to be looking to you for leadership. What is it that you're going to be able to provide them in that moment of, we haven't experienced this, how do we recover?
All right, well done, fellas. Now we're into the fun part, the fill-in-the-blank portion of this quiz, you could say. Michigan will win the Big Ten if blank.
If they get great production and great leadership out of their quarterback, that's really what it comes down to. And I know there's going to be questions about the offensive line. Will Donovan Edwards have, will he have the big plays in every game versus just, again, like we saw against Penn State or Washington or in the Rose Bowl? Like, you've got to be able to get good, consistent quarterback play, and they'll win the Big Ten if. Unless I'll just use Alex Orji as the example because I believe he's going to be the starting quarterback. If they can get that two-headed monster, that ability to run the ball consistently, possess the ball, not turn it over, but then find receivers down the field, he can use his legs to open up the running or to open up the passing game. So that's where if they get good play out of the quarterback, I think they're going to have a shot at this Big Ten title again.
Michigan will win the Big Ten if, I guess the smarmy answer would be, if Donovan Edwards revolutionizes the running back position like Barry Sanders and Walter Payton.
Well, he said he would last year.
I know, that's the joke. The real answer to me is they've got to be dominant up front on the offensive line again. Texas lost a couple guys on the interior of their defensive line. You look along the schedule, USC's a team that you should be able to bully. Oregon, all new defensive line. And Ohio State, the recipe is you win up front. If the offensive line, which replaces all five starters, is close to what they were or as good as they were, they will repeat and go four straight Big Ten titles.
I think you're both right. My first initial reaction was that if Alex Orji plays at the level of J.J. McCarthy last year, that's a tall task. But also how you do that is you have a good offensive line in front of you, playing well and protecting you and being able to run the football. Michigan makes the playoffs if blank.
They beat at least one of the big three on the schedule, Texas, Oregon, Ohio State. They win one of those three, they're in the playoff.
It's going to be interesting to see how the playoff committee is going to look at these tougher schedules this year for the SEC because Texas, Oklahoma are in it, and the lack of divisions, the same thing in the Big Ten. When you don't have divisions, it's going to be interesting because there's going to be a logjam at the top, And, yeah, I think it's the easy answer is, yeah, you got to beat either Texas, Oregon, or Ohio State, one of the three. And that would be a signature win for Sharon Moore, because those are the three games you go in at a deficit. Nobody's picking you to win those games. If you do that, you have a chance. And I still think, I know, Jim, we argued about this. I'm not going to get into it right now, but 9-3, if you lose all three of those, that's where it comes down to, what does the playoff committee look at? Because those are your toughest opponents. If you don't beat one of the big three on your schedule, even though you're 9-3, how do you deserve to make the playoffs?
You think they should get in just because they exist?
No, this isn't Michigan. If it was Penn State, if Ohio State, I think Ohio State's the best team in the Big Ten right now, and I know I'm not supposed to say that, especially in Ann Arbor.
In Ann Arbor.
If there's a 9-3 team in the Big Ten and they finish in the top four, I think with the strength of the Big Ten, they will still get in.
All right, halfway home here, guys. Donovan Edwards or Will Johnson will finish blank and blank in Heisman votes.
I think Will Johnson is going to finish third in the Heisman voting, because I have no inside knowledge. I do think that they will use him. You mentioned earlier, you've got to have wide receivers that step up. They have some talent there, but they don't have size there. So Will Johnson would provide that offensively. They can get very creative in a very Charles Woodson-like season, especially if they want to have a guy that is a front runner for the Heisman. Will Johnson would be that guy. Donovan Edwards, I think, is going to be more sixth or seventh, and I think it's going to be a tough start to the season, not because Donovan Edwards isn't going to be able to break some of those big runs. I just think behind a revamped and a brand new offensive line, it's going to be a slow start to the season. And if you're a Heisman candidate, you can't have that slow start.
I have both outside the top 10. And it's for some of what you said. I mean, I don't know that Will Johnson's going to play offense. I know it's hard as a defensive player. Nothing against the player he is. He'll be a top 10 pick in the draft. I don't think he'll be top 10 in the Heisman voting. And Edwards, again, running behind a new offensive line, I think he'll be on the outside.
Michigan will have blank first-round selections in the NFL draft.
John will probably tell me if I'm missing someone or selling them short. I have two definitive ones, Johnson and Mason Graham.
I think you have three, because I think Colston Loveland will be a first-round pick as well. So those two guys. And my outside shots are going to be what you see defensively from Kenneth Grant. I think he is a guy that could get into that first round, and I think Derek Moore is a guy that, you look at that defensive front, last year, so many guys were rotating in, you didn't have the ability to rack up stats. Derek Moore is going to be a guy that I think has a breakout season and could play his way into a late first round pick.
Michigan will finish the regular season with a blank record.
I think the end of the regular season, I'm going to go 9-3. And I think they do beat one of the big three, whether it's Texas or Oregon. Ohio State's going to be a taller task, especially at that time of the season. But I also think there's going to be one of those teams that kind of jumps up and surprises them. And that's where I talk about the leadership of Sharon Moore. I talk about the leadership. I just don't know where it's coming from. There's plenty of great options, but I think at the end of the year, they end up with a 9-3 record to end the season.
10-2. Here's how I think it goes.
Oh, you're more Wolverine than I am.
Oh, here we go. Emgo Costa. Here's my thought.
Take your blue glasses off, pal.
I think they'll beat Texas early in the season because they're missing two guys up front to beef on the D-line. Michigan can lean on the run game. They'll lean on most of the opponents in the Big Ten. The Oregon game is going to be pivotal. I think that's going to be a challenge for them, and Ohio State at the end of the season. Here's how I'd break it down. I think they win one of the big three games, and that gets them to 10-2.
They're going to have to, if they're going to get to 10-2, they're going to have to be very consistent in all the other, the nine games outside of the big three. And you're going to have to get, especially early on for against Texas, you're going to have to find a way to look at that offensive line and say, how do they find five guys, and how do they get five guys to work as one unit? And then also the quarterback, whether it's orgy, whether it's Tuttle, whether, you know, it doesn't matter who it is, you're going to have to find a guy that finds their rhythm early against Fresno State.
Well, and I could see a situation where they drop the game to Texas because Ewers is humming and they're further along and they bring back more offensive firepower. Michigan's offensive line is unsettled. I could see Michigan losing the Oregon game. But if you hired the right guy in Sherrone Moore, your offensive line by the final regular season game is going to have developed to where you continue to follow the recipe. And their first win of those big three may be the last of those big three. But that's the game you really know if you hired the right guy. Could he go into Columbus against their super team, have built a DNA, built up the offensive line, the position group he was coaching before taking over the head coaching gig? I think it's 10-2, even if that last game is the one that gets him 10.
And finally, Michigan's MVP will be blank.
Will Johnson. If I'm going to put him at third in the Heisman, he's going to have to be the MVP, whether they use him offensively or not, or on special teams or not. Defensively, we saw it in so many different games over the last couple of years, but especially in the national championship game. You got to have big-time players step up in big-time moments. He did that coming out of halftime with the interception last year. He is a guy that they are going to count on to give the ball back to the offense, to take it to the house if he gets an interception. He is the best athlete on the team, and I have high expectations, and I think there's a lot of opportunity for him in a lot of different ways. I just hope, whether it's Kirk Campbell, Sherrone Moore, that they can find ways to utilize his talents more than just on defense.
And I'll go Mason Graham. I think the strength of this team is on defense. I think it's up front in the trenches. I think he is dominant for Michigan this season.
Mm-hmm.
Jim, I would agree with you. I would say Mason Graham starts up front.
And that.
John.
That.
I went outside the box on so many different things.
Michigan Mad Libs. 97.1.
Hey, when it comes to an IRS collection or audit, you need a law firm that specializes in the resolution of all types of tax problems. And when dealing with the world's largest civil law enforcement agency.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or track pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Welcome back. Good morning. 97.1. Jim Costa, John Jansen hanging out live at the University of Michigan golf course this morning. Big Ten Media Days are this week.
Yeah.
Football is in the air, and that smile is what it's all about, baby.
It is right around the corner. Michigan reports on the 31st. I know Michigan State is going to start camp here pretty soon. The Lions, rookies are in, and today is the day for the vets. It's going to be unbelievable.
If you can hear the mower in the background, that's what that is.
Getting the grounds ready.
We got business to do. Greg has a series of questions, fill-in-the-blank Michigan Mad Libs for the upcoming season.
Well, we're actually going to start with some open-form questions, so it's a little bit of a blue book exam. Hope you guys didn't step on the M at the Diag to start the day.
Oh, never do. Never do.
We will start. Question number one, what is the biggest question you have about Michigan football this year?
The biggest question is going to be a leadership void. Who is going to step up? And this is where I always go to every single season at this time of the year. You move on from all the guys that had such influence last year, Mikey Sanders still, and that whole group of captains. Now it's going to be who fills that leadership void. Mason Graham, Kenneth Grant, Will Johnson. Who's going to be the quarterback? That's going to be a big question. But I'm more curious as to when you get into the tougher games like Texas and Ohio State at the end of the year, who has stepped up when things get tough to rally the troops, to make sure everybody knows it's going to be okay. We've got the talent. Now let's just go out there and play. So who's going to be those juniors and seniors that step up and fill the void that is left by those that have moved on and are playing on Sundays right now?
John goes intangible. I'll go tangible, this passing attack. You don't know who your quarterback is. You don't know who many of these receivers are. Are you going to be able to bludgeon people on the ground the way you did the year ago? You lost everybody up front. I think the question marks are in the downfield passing game.
Jim, those are the obvious. I will go the non-obvious of the tangible, the back end of the defense, the Rodmore injury, which has not gotten a lot of publicity, and yep. Keon Sabb transferring to Alabama. We do have Mekari Page back there. Who's the second safety spot? I'm looking at Quentin Johnson. Remember him, he had a huge hit in the Ohio State game last year. Back end of the defense, who replaces Rod Moore and Keon Sabb? Number two, what is the biggest challenge for Sherrone Moore in his first year?
The bigger Big Ten. I mean, the schedule is going to be a lot more difficult. Texas isn't in the Big Ten, but that's part of it. Now you throw Oregon in the mix, USC. You're going to have more difficult challenges along the way before that final game against Ohio State. It's just a tougher schedule, in addition to the fact that they lost so many people.
And here's the other thing. Here's my answer. It's at some point there's going to be a loss this year. Last year, obviously, Jim Harbaugh was the coach. They ran through everything. And Sherrone Moore had a chance to step in at Penn State, against Maryland, against Ohio State. But at some point this year, I really believe there's going to be an L. How does Sherrone Moore handle that as the head coach? As an offensive coordinator, it's you've got your side of the ball to rally the troops, to make adjustments, to corrections. But as the head coach, there is so much more. We know on game days he can call a good game, and he can be a game manager in those moments. But when you are the leader of the program, and you take a loss, the first one you've had in over a calendar year, how do you handle that situation? What the players are going to be looking to you for leadership. What is it that you're going to be able to provide them in that moment of, we haven't experienced this, how do we recover?
All right, well done, fellas. Now we're into the fun part, the fill-in-the-blank portion of this quiz, you could say. Michigan will win the Big Ten if blank.
If they get great production and great leadership out of their quarterback, that's really what it comes down to. And I know there's going to be questions about the offensive line. Will Donovan Edwards have, will he have the big plays in every game versus just, again, like we saw against Penn State or Washington or in the Rose Bowl? Like, you've got to be able to get good, consistent quarterback play, and they'll win the Big Ten if. Unless I'll just use Alex Orji as the example, because I believe he's going to be the starting quarterback. If they can get that two-headed monster, that ability to run the ball consistently, possess the ball, not turn it over, but then find receivers down the field, he can use his legs to open up the running or to open up the passing game. So that's where, if they get good play out of the quarterback, I think they're going to have a shot at this Big Ten title again.
Michigan will win the Big Ten if, I guess the smarmy answer would be, if Donovan Edwards revolutionizes the running back position like Barry Sanders and Walter Payton.
Well, he said he would last year.
I know, that's the joke. The real answer to me is they've got to be dominant up front on the offensive line again. Texas lost a couple guys on the interior of their defensive line. You look along the schedule, USC's a team that you should be able to bully. Oregon, all new defensive line. In Ohio State, the recipe is you win up front. If the offensive line, which replaces all five starters, is close to what they were or as good as they were, they will repeat and go four straight Big Ten titles.
I think you're both right. My first initial reaction was that if Alex Orji plays at the level of J.J. McCarthy last year, that's a tall task. But also how you do that is you have a good offensive line in front of you, playing well and protecting you and being able to run the football. Michigan makes the playoffs if blank.
They beat at least one of the big three on the schedule, Texas, Oregon, Ohio State. They win one of those three, they're in the playoff.
It's going to be interesting to see how the playoff committee is going to look at these tougher schedules this year for the SEC, because Texas, Oklahoma are in it, and the lack of divisions, the same thing in the Big Ten. When you don't have divisions, it's going to be interesting because there's going to be a logjam at the top. And, yeah, I think the easy answer is, yeah, you got to beat either Texas, Oregon, or Ohio State, one of the three. And that would be a signature win for Sherrone Moore, because those are the three games you go in at a deficit. Nobody's picking you to win those games. If you do that, you have a chance. And I still think, I know, Jim, we argued about this. I'm not going to get into it right now, but 9-3, if you lose all three of those, that's where it comes down to, what does the playoff committee look at? Because those are your toughest opponents. If you don't beat one of the big three on your schedule, even though you're 9-3, how do you deserve to make the playoffs?
You think they should get in just because they exist?
No, this isn't Michigan. If it was Penn State, if Ohio State, I think Ohio State's the best team in the Big Ten right now, and I know I'm not supposed to say that, especially in Ann Arbor.
In Ann Arbor.
If there's a 9-3 team in the Big Ten and they finish in the top four, I think with the strength of the Big Ten, they will still get in.
All right, halfway home here, guys. Donovan Edwards or Will Johnson will finish blank and blank in Heisman votes.
I think Will Johnson is going to finish third in the Heisman voting because I and this is, again, I have no inside knowledge. I do think that they will use him. You mentioned earlier, you've got to have wide receivers that step up. They don't. They have some talent there, but they don't have size there. So Will Johnson would provide that offensively. They can get very creative in a very Charles Woodson-like season, especially if they want to have a guy that is a front runner for the Heisman. Will Johnson would be that guy. Donovan Edwards, I think, is going to be more sixth or seventh, and I think it's going to be a tough start to the season, not because Donovan Edwards isn't going to be able to break some of those big runs. I just think behind a revamped and a brand new offensive line, it's going to be a slow start to the season. And if you're a Heisman candidate, you can't have that slow start.
I have both outside the top 10. And it's for some of what you said. I mean, I don't know that Will Johnson's going to play offense. I know it's hard as a defensive player. Nothing against the player he is. He'll be a top 10 pick in the draft. I don't think he'll be top 10 in the Heisman voting. And Edwards, again, running behind a new offensive line, I think he'll be on the outside.
Michigan will have blank first-round selections in the NFL draft.
John will probably tell me if I'm missing someone or selling them short. I have two definitive ones, Johnson and Mason Graham.
I think you could. I think you have three, because I think Colston Loveland will be a first-round pick as well. So those two guys. And my outside shots are going to be what you see defensively from Kenneth Grant. I think he is a guy that could get into that first round, and I think Derek Moore is a guy that, you look at that defensive front last year, so many guys were rotating in, you didn't have the ability to rack up stats. Derek Moore is going to be a guy that I think has a breakout season and could play his way into a late first round pick.
Michigan will finish the regular season with a blank record.
I think the end of the regular season, I'm going to go 9-3. And I think they do beat one of the big three, whether it's Texas or Oregon. Ohio State's going to be a taller task, especially at that time of the season. But I also think there's going to be one of those teams that kind of jumps up and surprises them. And that's where I talk about the leadership of Sherrone Moore. I talk about the leadership. I just don't know where it's coming from. There's plenty of great options, but I think at the end of the year, they end up with a 9-3 record to end the season.
10-2. Here's how I think it goes.
Oh, you're more Wolverine than I am.
Oh, here we go. Mgo Costa. Here's my thought.
Take your blue glasses off.
I think they'll beat Texas early in the season because they're missing two guys up front to beef on the D-line. Michigan can lean on the run game. They'll lean on most of the opponents in the Big Ten. The Oregon game is going to be pivotal. I think that's going to be a challenge for them in Ohio State at the end of the season. Here's how I'd break it down. I think they win one of the big three games, and that gets them to 10-2.
They're going to have to, if they're going to get to 10-2, they're going to have to be very consistent in all the nine games outside of the big three. And you're going to have to get, especially early on against Texas, you're going to have to find a way to look at that offensive line and say, how do they find five guys, and how do they get five guys to work as one unit? And then also the quarterback, whether it's Orgie, whether it's Tuttle, whether, you know, it doesn't matter who it is, you're going to have to find a guy that finds their rhythm early against Fresno State.
Well, and I could see a situation where they drop the game to Texas because Ewers is humming and they're further along and they bring back more offensive firepower. Michigan's offensive line is unsettled. I could see Michigan losing the Oregon game. But if you hired the right guy in Sherrone Moore, your offensive line by the final regular season game is going to have developed to where you continue to follow the recipe. And their first win of those big three may be the last of those big three. But that's the game you really know if you hired the right guy. Can he go into Columbus against their super team, have built a DNA, built up the offensive line, the position group he was coaching before taking over the head coaching gig? I think it's 10-2, even if that last game is the one that gets him 10.
And finally, Michigan's MVP will be blank.
Will Johnson. If I'm going to put him at third in the Heisman, he's going to have to be the MVP, whether they use him offensively or not, or on special teams or not. Defensively, we saw it in so many different games over the last couple of years, but especially in the national championship game. You got to have big-time players step up in big-time moments. He did that coming out of halftime with the interception last year. He is a guy that they are going to count on to give the ball back to the offense, to take it to the house if he gets an interception. He is the best athlete on the team, and I have high expectations, and I think there's a lot of opportunity for him in a lot of different ways. I just hope, whether it's Kirk Campbell, Sherrone Moore, that they can find ways to utilize his talents more than just on defense.
And I'll go Mason Graham. I think the strength of this team is on defense. I think it's up front in the trenches. I think he is dominant for Michigan this season.
Mm-hmm.
Jim, I would agree with you. I would say Mason Graham starts up front.
And that.
John.
That.
I went outside the box on so many different things.
Michigan Mad Libs. 97.1.
Hey, when it comes to an IRS collection or audit, you need a law firm that specializes in the resolution of all types of tax problems. And when dealing with the world's largest civil law enforcement agency, your case can take a lot of twists and turns. Your first call, your only call, should be to a firm like Abraham and Rose. They're prepared to advocate on your behalf, so you got someone in your corner. No matter if it's civil or criminal or even the Michigan Department of Treasury, whether personal income tax or business payroll taxes, you're going to need a real team of local lawyers, not some tax organization with a random person that you're never going to meet. Visit abrahamandrose.com today or call 248-539-5040 so you never personally have to deal with the IRS.
Beautiful Tuesday morning. We got the two Grand Slam coming up at 7:25 today. Your chance to win $2,000. We're out live today at the University of Michigan Golf Course. Jim Costa, John Jansen. We got Heather Park back at the studio ready for the two Grand Slam. We were talking a little Tigers to start the show, having some fun talking Michigan football. John, yesterday, Big Ten media poll comes out. You got the defending national champion Michigan Wolverines. An expected step back. They're not picked to finish first, second, or even third in the Big Ten. They come in fourth, according to the media. Your reaction to that?
Well, I mean, you also have the team that was playing against them in the national title game, Washington, who's in the bottom half of the Big Ten as well. And so it's all going to be every single year about roster turnover. And for Washington, it was a mass exodus to the NFL as well as transfer because Kalen DeBoer is now at Alabama.
Yep.
For Michigan, it was mass exodus, 13 players drafted in the NFL draft, and it's quarterback, it's a complete offensive line. So when you have that big of a turnover in your starting rotation, especially offensively, when you look at everybody, and I know Ohio State's going to have a new quarterback this year, but everything else is relatively the same or upgraded through the transfer portal. A lot of question marks about Michigan. What are they going to be offensively? Defensively, I don't think anybody questions them, especially when you change coordinators. Jesse Minter goes back to the NFL with Jim Harbaugh, but you have the guy that taught both of the last coordinators, Mike McDonald, Jesse Minter, and Wink Martindale. I don't think there's going to be any questions about Michigan's defense. It's simply about the offense. And so I'm not surprised at all that majority of people have them, and strength of schedule, have them picked fourth in the Big Ten. I know Penn State is one of those teams. Everybody is always looking for Penn State to take a big step forward. And under James Franklin, maybe they do this year. They have, I think, in this new era of the Big Ten scheduling, this year they have the easiest, but we're going to be able to see, can they go on the road? Nobody's looking at USC as a huge threat coming into the Big Ten. That is going to be Penn State going out west. How will the core of the Big Ten, and I know Penn State's not an original member, but they've been here long enough.
Yeah.
But how do they handle that West Coast trip? That's going to be, I think, a big question, because if they can go out there and get a win, you could look at them as a one-loss team. Michigan doesn't play them.
Right.
And
they don't play Oregon.
They don't
either.
Play Oregon, but they do play Ohio State. Ohio State, they host Ohio State. So it's
– This is – stop me if you've heard this before. This is supposed to be the year for Penn State. They bring back a quarterback. They hired a new OC. Remember the knock on them last year is they just didn't have enough explosives. The playbook and the offense was – tame. They bring in a coordinator from Kansas, and they're running all kinds of, you know, motions and exotic formations. Can they generate enough big plays? They got Fleming, the receiver from Ohio State, to go with a quarterback who's got an arm. And this is supposed to be their year with an easier schedule. My concern would be, one, it's James Franklin. Two, they lost some offensive linemen to the NFL. That's a position group I hate having to reshuffle. It's a concern for Michigan, too. I feel like Michigan will be third. I feel like Penn State will be four. And I'm probably just dogging James Franklin because the schedule sets up for Penn State to be the number three team in this conference.
Well, that's the track record of James Franklin, is that he can't find ways to win big games. He can't find ways to win against top-ranked opponents, let alone top-ranked opponents on the road. So, you know, but here's what Penn State does have going for him. Drew Aller, last year, inconsistent, but he was young. And I'm willing to look at the talent that he has. I don't know. I haven't watched their spring game or their spring practices. I don't know what type of development he's had this offseason. I know that the tools that he is going to be able to utilize, if he has done the work, he's going to be really good. And you look at Catron Allen, Drew Singleton in the backfield, a 1-2 punch. Reliable guys, both of them going to be juniors this year. And you mentioned Julian Fleming, who I think was underutilized at Ohio State. And honestly, it was just, I mean, they had
too many good players.
Yeah, it was a wealth of talent that they had there. They have all the pieces in place offensively to be a dominant offense. The question I have for them is defensively. What are they going to be? Up front, they're going to be very good, but what does the secondary look like? So there's a lot of challenges that they have there. But when it comes down to it, it's really going to be if Michigan finishes third in the Big Ten, does that make them a playoff team?
Yes.
Does it if they finish fourth?
Depends. You know where
so
I'm at.
So you're willing to come around to that?
You got
to
earn it though. You got to show me you beat one of the big teams. Because I can work around it if you're 9-3, but you beat Oregon, who's the number one team in the country, or you beat Ohio State, who's the number one team in the country. Maybe you get in as one of those final teams. I hate putting in four from a conference, especially if you don't beat anybody at the top of the ticket, so to speak. So here's how I'd break down the Big Ten. Ohio State got 21 first-place votes there, everybody's favorite. They got to go to Oregon. And I'm a fan of Dan Lanning, and I think that's a tough place to play. And I think Oregon's got more than a puncher's chance to win the Big Ten. I'd actually make them my favorite. I think Michigan will be third. I think Penn State will be fourth. That's an interesting debate. And for Michigan, we talked about it a little bit. There's no shortage of questions, right? The teams in this Big Four in the Big Ten all have a more proven quarterback. Penn State brings somebody back. And Ohio State and Oregon went to the portal. Michigan chose not to. That's a concern. Rebuilding your entire offensive line, that's a concern. But my thought here is you hired your O-line coach. If there's a position group I expect to see develop more than any other, it's the offensive line at Michigan. And if they do that, they're the number three team in the Big Ten. They're in the college football playoff. They'll beat one of the big boys. The next tier of the Big Ten, John, you've got Iowa, USC, Wisconsin. Could any of them play spoiler? Then you start going down the list. It's Nebraska, Rutgers, Washington. Maybe they're pesky. Michigan State. I was a little surprised by this. I thought they were going to be, I don't know, 13 or so in the new 18-team Big Ten. John, 16th for Jonathan Smith in his first season.
Well, you talk about the unknown. I think part of that is just everybody looking at it, whether it's media or, you know, coaches or people in the organizations or in the franchise, I call them franchises now because everybody
gets
paid.
They basically are pro teams.
There's just so many question marks. And we had that question when Mel Tucker took over. And, you know, we saw it with, you know, Kenneth Walker III. Like, do you have a playmaker? Do they have that at the quarterback position? Because he is familiar with Jonathan Smith. Do you have something that they can build around? And I know there was a mass exodus, but that's why there's this big question in East Lansing of what type of team are they going to be? What type of identity are they going to have? I think they're going to be physical. And when you play a physical brand of football, you have a chance to win some games. The big question I have is Wisconsin.
Because year two of the air raid, they're allegedly committed to this, but it's so anti-Wisconsin. If they get off to a slow start, do they get talk about, hey, get back? Hey, dummies, get in the three-point stance and run the ball.
Well, Luke Fickell is a really good coach. We saw what he did at Cincinnati, and he got a raw deal in Columbus when he took over in that whole, before Urban Meyer got there. There was a 6-6 season. That was Luke Fickell as interim head coach. I think he's a really good head coach. I'm curious and excited to see what they're going to be doing in Madison.
248-539-9797 as we react to the initial Big Ten media poll. Big Ten media days are this week. MSU coaches and players will talk tomorrow. Michigan coaches and players will talk Thursday. We're going to have Sharon Moore on the show later today as we broadcast live in Ann Arbor at the University of Michigan Golf Course. Connor Stallions.
Oh, man.
He's a name you don't want to say too loud around here. He's going to be featured in a Netflix documentary. What I want to know from you and everybody else, is this something you want to watch? We'll get to it next, 97.1. Beautiful Tuesday morning. We got the two Grand Slam coming up at 7:25 today. Your chance to win $2,000. We're out live today at the University of Michigan Golf Course. Jim Costa, John Jansen, we got Heather Park back at the studio ready for the two Grand Slam. We were talking a little Tigers to start the show, having some fun talking Michigan football. John, yesterday, Big Ten media poll comes out. You got the defending national champion Michigan Wolverines, an expected step back. They're not picked to finish first, second, or even third in the Big Ten. They come in fourth, according to the media. Your reaction to that?
Well, I mean, you also have the team that was playing against them in the national title game, Washington, who's in the bottom half of the Big Ten as well. And so it's all going to be every single year about roster turnover. And for Washington, it was a mass exodus to the NFL as well as transfer because Kalen DeBoer is now at Alabama.
Yep.
For Michigan, it was mass exodus, 13 players drafted in the NFL draft. And it's quarterback, it's a complete offensive line. So when you have that big of a turnover in your starting rotation, especially offensively, when you look at everybody, and I know Ohio State's going to have a new quarterback this year, but everything else is relatively the same or upgraded through the transfer portal. A lot of question marks about Michigan. What are they going to be offensively? Defensively, I don't think anybody questions them, especially when you change coordinators. Jesse Minter goes back to the NFL with Jim Harbaugh, but you have the guy that taught both of the last coordinators, Mike McDonald, Jesse Minter, and Wink Martindale. I don't think there's going to be any questions about Michigan's defense. It's simply about the offense. And so I'm not surprised at all that majority of people have them, and strength of schedule, have them picked fourth in the Big Ten. I know Penn State is one of those teams. Everybody is always looking for Penn State to take a big step forward. And under James Franklin, maybe they do this year. They have, I think, in this new era of the Big Ten scheduling, this year they have the easiest, but we're going to be able to see, can they go on the road? Nobody's looking at USC as a huge threat coming into the Big Ten. That is going to be Penn State going out west. How will the core of the Big Ten, and I know Penn State's not an original member, but they've been here long enough.
Yeah.
But how do they handle that West Coast trip? That's going to be, I think, a big question, because if they can go out there and get a win, you could look at them as a one-loss team. Michigan doesn't play them.
Right.
And
they don't play Oregon.
They don't
either.
Play Oregon, but they do play Ohio State. Ohio State, they host Ohio State. So it's...
This is tell me if you've heard this before. This is supposed to be the year for Penn State. They bring back a quarterback. They hired a new OC. Remember the knock on them last year is they just didn't have enough explosives. The playbook and the offense was tame. They bring in a coordinator from Kansas, and they're running all kinds of motions and exotic formations. Can they generate enough big plays? They got Fleming, the receiver from Ohio State, to go with a quarterback who's got an arm. And this is supposed to be their year with an easier schedule. My concern would be, one, it's James Franklin. Two, they lost some offensive linemen to the NFL. That's a position group I hate having to reshuffle. It's a concern for Michigan, too. I feel like Michigan will be third. I feel like Penn State will be four. And I'm probably just dogging James Franklin because the schedule sets up for Penn State to be the number three team in this conference.
Well, that's the track record of James Franklin, is that he can't find ways to win big games. He can't find ways to win against top-ranked opponents, let alone top-ranked opponents on the road. So, but here's what Penn State does have going for him. Drew Aller, last year, inconsistent, but he was young. And I'm willing to look at the talent that he has. I don't know. I haven't watched their spring game or their spring practices. I don't know what type of development he's had this offseason. I know that the tools that he is going to be able to utilize, if he has done the work, he's going to be really good. And you look at Catron Allen, Drew Singleton in the backfield, a 1-2 punch. Reliable guys, both of them going to be juniors this year. And you mentioned Julian Fleming, who I think was underutilized at Ohio State. And honestly, it was just, I mean, they
had too many good players.
Yeah, it was a wealth of talent that they had there. They have all the pieces in place offensively to be a dominant offense. The question I have for them is defensively. What are they going to be up front? They're going to be very good. But what does the secondary look like? So there's a lot of challenges that they have there. But when it comes down to it, it's really going to be if Michigan finishes third in the Big Ten, does that make them a playoff team?
Yes.
Does it if they finish fourth?
Depends.
You're willing to come around to that.
You got
to
earn it though. You got to show me you beat one of the big teams. Because I can work around it if you're 9-3, but you beat Oregon, who's the number one team in the country, or you beat Ohio State, who's the number one team in the country. Maybe you get in as one of those final teams. I hate putting in four from a conference, especially if you don't beat anybody at the top of the ticket, so to speak. So here's how I'd break down the Big Ten. Ohio State got 21 first-place votes there, everybody's favorite. They got to go to Oregon. And I'm a fan of Dan Lanning, and I think that's a tough place to play. And I think Oregon's got more than a puncher's chance to win the Big Ten. I'd actually make them my favorite. I think Michigan will be third. I think Penn State will be fourth. That's an interesting debate. And for Michigan, we talked about it a little bit. There's no shortage of questions, right? The teams in this Big Four in the Big Ten all have a more proven quarterback. Penn State brings somebody back. And Ohio State and Oregon went to the portal. Michigan chose not to. That's a concern. Rebuilding your entire offensive line, that's a concern. But my thought here is you hired your O-line coach. If there's a position group I expect to see develop more than any other, it's the offensive line at Michigan. And if they do that, they're the number three team in the Big Ten. They're in the college football playoff. They'll beat one of the big boys. The next tier of the Big Ten, John, you've got Iowa, USC, Wisconsin. Could any of them play spoiler? Then you start going down the list. It's Nebraska, Rutgers, Washington. Maybe they're pesky. Michigan State. I was a little surprised by this. I thought they were going to be, I don't know, 13 or so in the new 18-team Big Ten. John, 16th for Jonathan Smith in his first season.
Well, you talk about the unknown. I think part of that is just everybody looking at it, whether it's media or, you know, coaches or people in the organizations or in the franchise—I call them franchises now because everybody
gets
paid.
Are pro teams.
There's just so many question marks, and we had that question when Mel Tucker took over, and you know we saw it with you know Kenneth Walker III. Like, do you have a playmaker? Do they have that at the quarterback position because he is familiar with Jonathan Smith? Do you have something that they can build around? And I know there was a mass exodus, but that's why there's this big question in East Lansing of what type of team are they going to be? What type of identity are they going to have? I think they're going to be physical. And when you play a physical brand of football, you have a chance to win some games. The big question I have is Wisconsin.
Yeah, because year two of the air raid, they're allegedly committed to this, but it's so anti-Wisconsin. If they get off to a slow start, do they get talk about, hey, get back, hey, dummies, get in the three-point stance and run the ball?
Well, Luke Fickell is a really good coach. We saw what he did at Cincinnati, and he got a raw deal in Columbus when he took over in that whole, before Urban Meyer got there. There was a 6-6 season. That was Luke Fickell as interim head coach. I think he's a really good head coach. I'm curious and excited to see what they're going to be doing in Madison.
248-539-9797 as we react to the initial Big Ten media poll. Big Ten media days are this week. MSU coaches and players will talk tomorrow. Michigan coaches and players will talk Thursday. We're going to have Sharon Moore on the show later today as we broadcast live in Ann Arbor at the University of Michigan Golf Course. Connor Stallions.
Oh, man.
He's a name you don't want to say too loud around here. He's going to be featured in a Netflix documentary. What I want to know from you and everybody else, is this something you want to watch? We'll get to it next, 97.1.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.